So the sunshine hour was and is 1 hour to switch off, to better switch on to yourself, others, and the world around you. Something bright, relaxed, creative, just to connect to one another. So no one knew each other, 8 people in the Zoom. I started with my community, and that was, it just got out of control. So started, I think, on the 3rd or 4th day of the quarantine, and then I did session every day, and it got to a number of like more than 500 people connecting, more than 40 countries. It was just like nuts. I had people sending me emails from anywhere saying, can I get into the next session? I've heard about your sunshine hour. I would love a bit of sunshine.
This week's guest is Caroline Arditi. Born and raised in Paris, she's a creative and unconventional woman of action. Her mission is to make the world more human and help people feel more alive. Building on her career in corporate communications and PR, Caroline is now founder of Sunshine Makers, an experiential agency focused on creating positive momentum in the world. Through her Sunshine Hour and Supper Club, she nurtures a growing global community of believers and doers working to make the world a more joyful place. In her book, New or Us in English, she shares a wealth of advice, inspirational stories, and tools and tips to learn how to build a community, foster bonds, and feel a sense of belonging one step at a time. Caroline is also embarking on her most ambitious project, hashtag the Million Creative Tribe. By collaborating with schools and marginalized communities, she aims to connect 1 million individuals to their creativity and unleash their full human potential. Caroline is a difference maker and is certainly a dose of sunshine and a refreshing antidote to the negative news feeds that bombard us with stories of the threat of AI, political polarization, social isolation, global conflicts, and impending climate calamity. So I hope you enjoy this uplifting episode with Caroline Arditi. Caroline, welcome to the Impossible Network.
Thank you, Mark, for having me.
It's an absolute delight, and it's a long time hiatus, so it's really good to be back on again with you. So we've established what you do, but let's go really deep right now and dive in and ask you, who are you as a human being?
Who am I? That's a good question. I'd start by saying I'm a citizen of the world. So I'm Parisian, born and raised, but more certainly the world has shaped the human I'm today. So my tribe is very much in all the different parts of the world, and I think. Second one, I'd say I'm unconventional. So I like to do things differently. I like to twist things and make it fun. I'd say I'm a woman of action. So I do what I say. I do what I preach, and I'd rather make it now and not later. And I think I find a lot of satisfaction by doing so. And maybe the last one, I should have started with this. I'm a creative person, so I put creativity in almost everything I do. And I make sure to nurture my creative soul. And maybe a few other keywords that would describe me as a human would be hypersensitive. So that's a big one for me. Adventurous, positive, generous, passionate. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
Interesting description of who you are as a human being, this creative, unconventional woman of action, then does lead me to ask the next question. So who made you that creative, unconventional woman of action, or what made you you?
I would say a couple of different things and people. I'll start maybe with my parents and education. And I think I was lucky enough, and I'm lucky enough because they're still alive, thank God, to have very open-minded parents. So they always were and are still very supportive of my past, what I do, the decision of my life's journey, even if they might not understand anything that I do, but it's fine. Like, they're very open to listen, and yeah, they very intrigued, and that surely helped me, I think, follow my dreams and not take the path that the world or conventions wanted me to take. So that's the first one. Then the second one would be school. And that would be unusual to me to say that today, because back in the days, like I'm very thankful today of what happened back in the days, the little Caroline and what it had brought me to the person I became today. Because what I've experienced in the past at school was not like, it was quite hardcore. Like I didn't belong. So I had some difficulties. So I had dyslexia in the playground so I started wearing glasses maybe when I was 3 years old. But back in the days, like classmates were not really nice with each other. I mean, not all the time. So I'd get like so many different names. And back in the time, like I was very introvert. I was very shy. Didn't know what to say, what to do. And I didn't have the tools. So it was not easy. And I think I was like put on a side. So I think the lesson now. So it's funny how when you look back and you connect the dots today, I'm really thankful for what happened back in the days, because as I had all those troubles at school, my urge to belong, my urge to create a community, my urge to connect with each other and build that inspiring, nurturing community is actually at the core of everything that I'm doing. So it started from back in the days.
It's interesting because it could have set you on a completely different path. There must have been some sort of inner steeliness to you, because a lot of kids with, you know, that being different at school is standing out, as you said, becoming shy, introverted. That could have become a lifelong set of characteristics that are almost alien to what you're doing now. So rather than withdrawn to yourself, you had this inner urge to belong, to build network. What do you think made that? Is it just nature? It's not something that your parents nurtured, or were they aware of what you were going through emotionally at school and encouraging you to be something more than the person that they were maybe projecting onto you?
That's actually really interesting what you said, because my parents didn't really realize all that back in the days. And I think it's just very recently when we might touch on that later, I wrote a book, and on the book and at the very beginning of the book, that's what I explain, with like a couple of different stories, and one of which is like a bit intense. And my parents didn't even, like, they were kind of very surprised that all of this came out. But what I can say is, and that's I think my third point and fourth points to your question, is my troubles and life experiences helped and shaped the way I am today. So the travels, I think not so long after I decided to leave France and go to Sydney for 4 years. So lived in Australia, didn't know anyone back in the time. I was 21, and I think I grew twice as fast because I had to create my life all over again. So it was just an amazing opportunity space to build my life my own way, when in France it started, like, I'm not going to say in a bad way, but it was challenging. So, and I think this experience really shifted my mindset and opened myself to a whole new world, cultures, way of thinking. And actually, when I came back, one thing that really struck me, there were so many things, because it's very different living in Australia compared to Paris, because I'm based in Paris. I'm here actually now in Amsterdam, but I'm based in Paris. But one thing that I really smiled at when I came back is, for instance, at work, like people in Australia would start any work stuff talking about the opportunity space. Whereas when I came back to France, the starting point was the problem or the issue to try and solve. So when you're talking about opportunity or the issue or problem to solve, this is not the same starting point. So that was quite interesting. And I think,
Could I go back? Because you jumped into going to Sydney I just want to clarify, you went as a young girl at school going through what many would describe as trauma, having people objectifying you as something different, feeling an outsider, being an introvert. At what point did you, if you have any defining memory of when you started to, your worldview emerged that you were more than the way that people were projecting on you? When did that characterization change? When did you become more, let's say, outward looking, confident? Did you build a friend network to sort of evolve into the human that you are now? What was that pivot? Because it must have been a point at school, I'm assuming, where something started to change in you. And what was the influence? What triggered that?
I think it started when I went to business school. So it was still in Paris. Yes, you're right. So I did a 3 years business school in Paris. And that's when I started and I had the urge to start a community. And at that time, it started with, I was doing lots of sports. So I was golfing. And that took like a pretty big amount of my time. So I decided to create a sports association, golf association. And that's when I started to build something around people. And then I had the desire to connect students to people that did the school before and that had this experience, the work experience, the business experience, and to have like some workshops and events. And that's when I all started. And I think really what helped me was to get away and build that, like I'd say, second life away from home. Mm-hmm. And that was Sydney.
So you've come a long way, Caroline, since that early urge a university to build community, and you went into a career in communications and PR with that sort of that desire and that inner sense, this urge to do something around community. And what took you down a slightly different path? Because PR isn't a natural sort of path to go when you've got a desire to build networks and community and have impact. Well, certainly not the type of impact I think you were maybe considering.
So yes, that's right. I've worked for 15 years in the PR, communication and events industry and loved it. And I think I started by doing, and that was like always there doing events. So kind of experiences before it was, and for years it was for major brands that we all know. And then I shifted. And it was a couple of years ago, and it all started because of something that we all know as the coronavirus.
The COVID,
and that had quite an unexpected experience at that time. And I think for the last 4 years, I am doing a different sort of work, and I'm trying to achieve something that is very, very much inspiring me, and also trying to do good for the people and the planet. And that's something that started, 3 years ago, I'd say.
Well, that leads us nicely to that, the third big question, which is, what are you working to achieve before you shuffle off this mortal coil? As you just described there, and I'm looking at your website, you do say that your mission is to make the world more human and humans more alive, which is a lovely line that really sort of encapsulates a very clear single-minded mission. And you say also one step, one breath at a time. So when we first met, you told me about that experience in COVID and why it was such a transformational, positive, pivotal point for you in your life and the direction you're taking. A lot of people, it was certainly transformational, but not in a positive way. Could you maybe just take us back to that time in 2020? I think all of us can vividly remember the experiences of lockdown and what your experience was like and the impact that had on your network of friends, and then how it expanded and led to what you're doing now. If you could take us on that journey.
So when all of that happened, I was working on three major projects. the three major projects just got on hold. And it was very unexpected. So I was quarantined at home in Paris in a small apartment, no outside balcony. And it was pretty hardcore in Paris. But the fact is, I was feeling great and I had a lot of ideas and a lot of energy. And I was surely very connected to the world. So why is that? Because I think for the past 25 years, I've nurtured my community in a very conscious way. And I knew how to belong. I knew how to connect. And I think the momentum was still there when everyone was quarantined. So what I did was straight away, I kept reaching out because this is how I am. And very quickly, I understood that I had to offer people that energy and that creativity that I had inside to help people get better or actually just cruise on that time when everyone was quite like, yeah, it was quite brutal. So I just thought, what are the things, what are my superpowers that I can reach out to people? And that's when I started the Sunshine Hour. So the Sunshine Hour was and is, because it's still running, 1 hour to switch off, to better switch on to yourself, others, and the world around you. It was something bright, relaxed, creative, just to connect to one another. So no one knew each other in the Zoom session. So it was Zoom session, 8 people in the Zoom. I started with my community, wouldn't make any difference between clients, friends, or whatever. I would just make a difference between French people, French and English. So I would do like English and French version. And that was, it just got out of control. So started, I think, on the 3rd or 4th day of the quarantine. So very early during the first quarantine. And then I did session every day, the first quarantine. And it got to a number of, I don't know, I had almost like more than 500 people connecting, more than 40 countries.
Wow.
It was just like nuts. But the beauty was...
And you knew all these people across 40 countries.
I didn't know all the people. And that's the beauty about it, because I started with the people I knew. And then after, the word of mouth was so crazy that I had people sending me emails from anywhere saying, can I get into the next session? I've heard about your Sunshine Hour. I would love a bit of sunshine. That's what they said back in the time. But at the end, so that was kind of expected, because so I had so much fun, like facilitating all those sunshine hours. And at the end, not only was I witnessing people doing business with each other, people becoming friends, connecting, growing, starting some conversation, and put themselves into action mode. So that was their part. And for myself, so I had just found my why just out of being in quarantine. And it's just because, and I think that's coming back to your first question, that in this time, like very challenging time, like my thing was, I knew that I couldn't spend my energy on what I couldn't control. So the outside world. So I'd put all my energy and all my focus to what I could create. And that's what I did.
I've got a question. And in terms of just how that hour manifested, did you have an idea at the beginning how you would bring together these random people and what the conversation would be? Did you have a topic? How did you manage it? Or did you just bring them together and just let it flow?
No, so I think that's one of my zone of genius. So it was 1 hour. It was very, very well distributed. So started with some icebreakers because people didn't know each other. So anyone that would connect to the session, they would know anyone in the session. And by the end, they would share so many personal stuff. It was quite magical. But I created like this safe space so that people could feel comfortable connecting with one another in a very simple, authentic, sincere way. And I think by being vulnerable, they connected and we connected at a deeper level. And that's what when I said, and when I talked about creativity before, creativity was and is in the middle of everything that I do. So there was some creativity magic in there as well, because like, for example, one thing that the first thing that people would do, I would make people draw. So they were drawing. So I would ask a question and they didn't answer by just talking, but they shared their drawings. So that's kind of some of the ideas that I shared.
So how is that taking on this trajectory from the, let's say we're now approaching 4 years since that defining time in 2020. You've recently written a book, New. How has that experience changed the trajectory? And, you know, what are you working now to achieve with this new direction that you're in? What are your hopes, expectations?
I think, okay, so the last 4 years, I've understood that I needed to put my energy to make people feel alive. And one question that I love to ask people, I love to ask people so many questions, but one is, when is the last time you felt deeply alive? And people tend to like look at me saying, oh my God, I've got no idea. Anyway, so that's being alive. I think, and talking about communities and belonging, I do think that if you belong, you feel alive. If you feel alive, you are fulfilled. And if you're fulfilled, you're happy. But I think the first starting point is to belong. And with the quarantine, coronaviruses, screens, social media and everything, it surely didn't help. Mm-hmm. And I think people have no clue how to bond anymore in real life. People need assistance. They need reminders. They need inspiration. They need directions. They need to understand that screens are not the answers. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book. It's in French, hopefully one day in English, but it's called Us. Mm-hmm. So it's very much of a practical guide to like with ideas, stories, challenges, just to show people that they need to belong to be happy. And it's based on also research. I've done lots of research, and one of which is really interesting. It's one in the US that was done for like 75 years. It's Harvard who did research on happiness. Mm-hmm. And to cut it short, like the answer was the ones that live the longest are the happiest and are the healthiest, are the one who nurture their relationship with care in real life. So it was not the one that were like the richest or had like big houses or anything. Mm-hmm. It was the people, the tribe, the people. So that's also one of the reasons I wrote this book. Like, people need to understand it's for our physical and mental health that we need to talk to people. We need to bond with each other and we need to take time to do that.
It's not, I suppose, just COVID. I mean, I think COVID was an accelerant to leading people to feel isolated and disconnected. I'd hate to think what the long-term impact is going to be on kids who didn't get to go to school at a transformational time in their lives. But it's also, I think we can look at just the impact of social media, things like dating apps as well. The impact, all these, as you say, the screens have had on us to make us not necessarily fear physical connection, but it also, it's conditioned us away from just the natural way that we connect, whether it's walking into a bar and just speaking to a random stranger or a coffee shop, is to immerse ourselves in these screens, which is, it's our attention is no longer in the physical world. Even when we're out physically, we're disconnected. I mean, how often do we go to events? And tonight I'm going to an event here in Austin. I went to plenty in New York. And when you're at these networking events, everyone's standing up, if they're on their own, they're on their screens. So there's a behavior change we've got to somehow trigger in people. Yeah, so you can create community like you're doing, and you can encourage and nurture it. But how do we get people to, how do we wind back the use of these screens when we're in physical spaces, when we're coming together, and to encourage people and entice them back to the beauty and power and serendipity of physical connection with strangers?
I think people do that because it's just easy. You've got your phone, you've got your screen, and it's easy. It's quick and easy. So some people just do that because that's what came. Like you order some food with your phone. You switched and you date with phones. You watch Netflix on your phone. Anyway, so I think for the last 4 years, everything that I'm doing is pretty much in real life. So when I say make the world more human and the human more live, how I do that, it's by doing human experiences in real life and make people connect at a different level or frequency. So it's the energy and the time you put into going back to simple act of kindness, simple ways of connecting with each other. I've got lots of rituals. So what I do for work now, and it's bizarre to say for work because I just feel it's just, I do it for life. The creativity, so I'm a creative coach. So I'm enabling people to connect, to reconnect to their creative power. So that's one. I'm a Wim Hof instructor. So that's the second one. So it's also human experiences, and that's, we might touch base on that after, but it's fascinating because it's just like a natural way of reconnecting to yourself and the nature around, doing lots of icebreakers without ice. Because now I say with or without ice. No, without, I started without ice. Mm-hmm. And that's just to try make teams, again, like bond, and make connection, like closer connection, and talk their truth, because we forgot about this. And I think the last one is, I've got a supper club in Paris amongst all my other rituals, but I've got a supper club, and the supper club is also a way. So it's not thousands of people. It's 8 people around a table once a month where I make people connect with each other again on a different frequency. So it's, and I'm not using any type of screens, any very hype, I don't know, like materials, or what I do is going back to the basics, which means cooking myself. So everything is homemade, and the way I make people, no one know each other again. And they leave the supper club saying, haven't had this type of connection with strangers for such a long time.
Wow.
So yeah, I think what we need to nurture going forward is going back to simple acts of being together, being with oneself and being together with the world.
Your book clearly is a way to scale your impact by inspiring other people to take up your mantle, to follow your manifesto. And I should just read your manifesto because I really like it. So for people that don't go to your website, it's a community of believers and doers. We are a gang of thinkers and makers for a brighter future. We like to shake our community and do things differently. We spotlight and support positive impact initiatives. We shape collective innovation and creativity. We embrace and grow positive emotions. We aim to inspire and create change. We are willing to commit to a better world. It's just a beautiful sentiment. So while your book will give you, and once, especially when it's in English, greater scale, how can other people build on what you've done? Because you physically, you're one person, unless you're building a network of Carolines to go out into other countries, not just in France or in Holland. How do you bring it to the States? How can you encourage people to create other sunshine hours, supper clubs, icebreakers without the ice, in my case, and to learn from your insight and experience and as you say, your zone of genius? How can we scale this? Because it's an imperative that we need to address the societal damage that's been done by isolation and loneliness.
I'd say the couple of different actions that you can do and people can do. I think the first time is give some time. So we need to take some time to connect and to reconnect with some like old friendships. And time is a big one. Step into action mode is the second one.
Mm-hmm. How can we scale this? How can you scale it? And how can people like myself in the US build on what you're doing and actually take action? Because as you said at the beginning, you're a woman of action. And I think everyone else feels compelled to do something, but most people just don't know where to start.
Finding your people and building a community and making it to larger scale, I think you need some time. So you need to put time aside for like to connect with one another and to step into action mode. So what I do and a couple of my rituals that I've been doing for the last 15 years, one is connect people with one another. And that's like super important. And I think this is something I've got in my blood. So whenever I meet someone, my brain is actually already thinking of the person I should connect you with. And I think, Mark, I've got already a couple of people in mind. So that's the first one. And then,
I mean, just to say, jump in there, I do that as well. I've been doing it for years. And my frustration with that is I brought so many people together and then I don't know what happens after that. It's almost like there's an invisibility to it. So how do you go beyond that phase one? Because I think there's a lot of people like to connect people and we go, oh, you should know this person and you should connect. And I can see that's a phase one, but I've always felt there's something more to be done.
You know what? I've done also, so I'm doing a couple of times a year, some get together always in real life, no screens, to make all of those people reconnect with each other and have the tribe unified. So that's one. And I'm always doing it with intention. So it's not another gathering. It's a different way to gather people together. But that's the same concept that I've got with my supper club. It's not another dinner in town. It's something where you grow, you ask questions, you are meaningful in the way you connect with each other. So that's one. And I think you don't really need to always be in the center of all the connection that you've made, because it reminds me of something that I've shared in the book about smile, because I think smiling is the best first connection you can have with someone without even talking. And when I say like coming back to basics, it's just like simple random acts of being a human that helps you connect with each other and make the world more human. And I think smile, so if you think about it, like back in the days as babies, we would smile like 400 times a day. Mm-hmm. 400 times. As human now, as adults, it goes down to 20 times a day on average.
Wow. That's incredible data.
But the last number is one of which that I'm sharing with the world always, is if you smile to one person once, it impacts 500 smiles in a day on a row. So you smiling to someone, mm-hmm. it impacts like 500 smiles.
How?
So it's just like research. So whenever I receive a smile, I'm more entitled to smile again to someone else. If you see some people smiling to each other, you're going to smile as well as a return. It's just like, it's just even like deeper than word of mouth. Like it's just something that connects to each other. So if you think of smiling and then connection, and when you connect someone with someone else, this someone else will like the smile. It's just like a ripple effect.
That's fascinating.
So the work will be done and the world will become brighter because of your single act of connecting with someone or smiling to someone. Or it just, and I think I should have started by this, but everything needs to come from the heart and not the ego. So anything that you do to connect with one another, or even to connect some people with each other, might it be supper club or whatever, like all the creativity work that I'm doing with people, I always, and my intention for people is that they travel from their head to their hearts. And that's one of the longest journey that is on earth. So, yeah.
But when people come to the supper club, presumably they're always, it's not the same people. There's always new guests invited. How long does it take? I mean, you see they come there guarded, reticent, in their head. How do you create that journey at that, around that table over food, which is a natural gathering place for us humans anyway? But what mechanisms do you use to put people at ease and to allow them to flow into their heart space?
So I've got, this is my special kind of magic, that I use the same ingredients there and in all of my workshops that I do. None of the things are, everything is out of the box. So I make sure, so first I just set my intention and I share my intention. That's not a traditional dinner party. It's a place where you're going to share and you're going to be you. And that's like the rules. I set the rules, if there are any. And that anything that happens there is, might be like very, some things may be very personal, but it's just a safe space. So I create the space with intention, love and care. And very quickly, so at the very, very beginning of when they enter, so it's in my place. So it's just like the couple of different details that makes the gathering special, because it's in my place. I do the food myself and I ask people, I'm not going to give you all my secrets, I'm just going to share with you, because if people want to experience the supper club in Paris, they're welcome to join in the table. But I ask people to come with something, and that's not a bottle of wine. It's something else. And the first thing I ask them to do before introducing to each other is, I'm again, they've got like piece of papers and pen, and we do something creative to share what their personal story is, because that's another question I love to ask. What's your personal story? So I'm not asking like that, because it's a bit brutal when you come in.
The people that come to the supper club, do they apply, or do you select them from your network?
So it's a mix of both, but now I've got a page on my website, so people do apply, and I ask a few questions. And again, on the website, as you apply, you know where you're gonna end up. Like it's obvious from my storytelling, and if people don't feel comfortable, they don't join in. And there are a couple of questions that I ask, and one of which is, what are you going to bring to the table? And with this, I'm not meaning, again, bottle of wine or anything. It's just, what is your special sparks that you're going to bring to the table?
It sounds to me like there's an aspect of your you're inviting people to not expose, but to show their vulnerability, to open themselves, to show a part of their character, their life, their story in a place, a safe space that they probably wouldn't otherwise in the comfort of strangers. It must be quite a cathartic experience for a lot of people. You must see a transformation in terms of from when they walk in to when they walk out, which must be very, but one, empowering for you, but also sort of gratifying to see that.
Yeah, so it's in 3 hours' time or 4 hours' time, it's just a big shift from the minute they got in to when they leave. And I think I've managed to create this space and to let this magic happen because, and again, if it's when I'm connecting the dots, looking backwards, I felt really vulnerable and I didn't want to share my tears. And I thought I couldn't do that for so many years. And I thought that was not what I should be showing to people. So I would make myself like, be very like showing strong and being this strong woman. And with times, I understood that my vulnerability is my biggest strength to connect with each other. And when I understood that, it just like, it was a big shift in the way I interact with people. I make bond with people, and that's how I can create some safe space because I'm hypersensitive. So I know what, like I know in advance some of the things that will happen and how I need to deal with that. So I know the space is very safe because if it's safe for me, it's safe for others for sure.
Can you talk to us about your book and explain what it, you said it's new us. Is it a guidebook? Is it a manual? But maybe just set some expectations of people that either can read French or to look out and put their names down for when it's out in English, what to expect.
Yeah, it's a practical guide. So you've got like different sections, but what I wanted to share with the world is just like practical tips, ideas, stories to step into action mode, to find your people, build your tribe, feel inspired, reach out to people, and how to feel alive with the people, with your tribe. So it's coming from also my own story on top of research, of course, but my own story from being a shy introvert, kept out of the tribe, to being now inspiring communities, talking, speaker on different events about community. So I interviewed 17 people telling that the stories, and I also tell a few of my stories because what inspired me to do this book is when I set up my company. So when I shift 4 years ago, I had two things that came up from people. The one was, oh, Carol, yeah, that's going to be really easy for you because you know everyone and you've got ideas all the time. And I'm like, after hearing this for like so long, I'm like, this is not easy. You don't know where I'm coming from. So the starting point was not that easy. And so I wanted to share a simple way of, if I managed to be here now, what have I put in place over all those years to come to this stage of inspiring people in the community space and creativity field. So also, I think one of my, and that's something that I love to share, one of my rituals, it's also about community and learning and coming back to the question. So I'm mixing a different question, but when you ask at the very beginning, what made you you, I'd say one of the things, I never got a TV, so I was, and I never really, really read newspapers. So that's a good way to keep healthy out of all the drama that's happening in the world. But how do I learn, grow? It's with the people I meet. And one of my rituals that I've been doing for the last 15 years I'm taking one coffee with a stranger per week. So that's been going on for 15 years. And that's just amazing how I've learned what I did, the stories I got. And you never know what can happen over a cup of coffee. It might be in real life. It might be over a screen, but it's just an amazing way to learn the world and to find. It's also a way for me to get inspired every day.
What started that behavior?
I was bored. And I think I've always, and that's not easy on a daily basis, but I need to be challenged. I need to be inspired from morning to night. Like that's the, and when I mean inspired, it's not like I need to read like 100 books and like a deep dive into like very complexity stuff, but I'm very curious of people and the world in general. And I think I managed to learn and to get into my brain stories that are told by people and not reading books. Or if I see something on TV that I don't have a TV, but on a computer or whatever, I'm not going to be able to remember half of the things that I've watched. However, if I talk to someone or someone tells me a story, I will connect and I will connect the dots, and it might actually trigger something on the work I'm doing right now, or any connection, any weird connection. And it's going back to what you said before, serendipity.
Yeah, it must be fascinating to have gone, even before you set up the Sunshine Hour, to have gone through that habitual behavior of meeting someone new every week takes a degree of courage, because a lot of people are stepping outside your comfort zone and feeling comfortable with ambiguity and uncertainty. And there must have been something in your childhood, and that going back to those school days when you were the outsider, the person that looked a bit different, that was maybe objectified, maybe gave you that inner confidence to actually reach out to strangers and to invite them. Because I know people have done what you're describing for a period of time and use it for social media and that type of thing. But 15 years, that's a long time. You must have encountered some fascinating, life-affirming stories in that period and led you to put in place the building blocks of what you're doing now. So I suppose that's my question in my sort of convoluted way. Do you think you would be doing what you're doing now if you hadn't gone through that process of the 15 years of coffee conversations?
I think it surely helped in a way. And very unconsciously, I was planting seeds.
Yeah.
But again, it's when you look back and you connect the dots that it all makes sense. And it's not going to make sense whatever you do, actually. Sometimes it's not making sense, but just continue planting seeds. And over time, you know, you're going to know why you did that. And I think why it works for me and why it's still inspiring me and I'm still doing it 15 years later, it's just because I'm doing it in a place of love and not to show off on social media. Because what I do is very basically, I reach out. Nothing is put on social media except when I've got like stories, unexpected stuff that is happening. And I do make people, I've got one ritual that I do on my coffee rituals. So I ask one question, is actually the same all the time. And sometimes I take photos, and I've got stories like I need to do some projects just out of the coffee and the people I met. And I shared quite a few stories in my book, one of which is, and it happened not so long ago, like 2018, met a girl that was quite fascinating. And she was doing she had a company doing biscuits, and she was like putting messages on biscuits. And I organized, that was back in the time when I was working at a chocolate show, and I organized with her. And that was just out of random conversation, like really random conversations. I said, I want to do something big with you at the Chocolate Show. And she said, oh, what's your idea? And I'm like, I want to organize a live love proposal, like a proper proposal from a couple that, like, someone who wants to get married. And she's like, how am I going to do that? I said, well, you've got the community. Like, she's got like this massive community online. People love her biscuits and everything. And they were using the biscuits to share like big news, like life news. And we ended up doing that proposal, finding that couple. It went live on TV, social media. And I think out of the 7 years I worked at this chocolate company, it's the first year I actually cried during the whole thing. So, and just, this was, we met for coffee at 9 a.m. a Tuesday morning. So anything is possible when you connect with one being, again, in a place of heart and not expecting anything.
That's beautiful. I love it. It's funny how the thing that you keep coming back to throughout the conversation is you can't connect the dots. You only connect the dots looking back. And that's something that Steve Jobs said in his great commencement address. You can't connect the dots looking forward. You're connecting dots now, funnily, in a way, with what you're doing. You're creating a network of dots, and the impact, I think this ripple effect you're having on people is going to be fascinating to look at, looking back in 10 or 15 years, what the impact of this community network building is going to have on people's lives, on communities and society. Particularly why I think it is so important, aside from, I've talked about the impact of social media, the pandemic of loneliness, we're also facing, there's also the polarization that's happening in society with politics. But we've got the huge opportunity, upside opportunity of AI, but also the impact it's going to have on our humanity. And I think the only thing that can protect us humans from, as we get to general artificial intelligence, is our ability to connect with other people as humans and what can emerge when we come together as human beings, not isolated. So if we think about what's the moat that's going to protect us from the existential threat of AI, it is our common humanity. And I think what you're doing is putting in place the mechanisms and the habit forming behaviors that we need to recapture because we've lost them. So I think that it is it's amazing what you're doing. I think there's something even bigger there that people need to be inspired by and need to embrace if we are going to actually sort of protect ourselves as a species going forward. Now, there's a couple of things you've said. You talked at the beginning about your creativity. I also noticed on your site you have a hashtag, the Million Creative Tribe. Can you explain that in the context of what you're doing?
Yeah, so that's my big project for the next, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 years. So I've understood by doing all those workshops on creativity for companies, so more corporates, that there are so many limiting beliefs around creativity. One being, I'm not creative and I'm never going to be creative. So that's something big for people. And coming from a place where I embrace the fact that creativity is my zone of genius. I'm not afraid to say that I'm creative, but I actually help people connect to their creative soul. So that project is, I've got the ambition to connect 1 million people to their creativity soul. And I want to start by getting out of corporates because, I mean, I love doing work with corporates and that's amazing. But some people don't have the budget, don't have the resources, are not part of companies, and they need to connect to their creativity inside, to their power of creativity, because this is like the sense of belonging in a different manner. I think if you don't connect to your creative side, you're just losing like half of your potential as a human. And I think there are so many health and well-being benefits about connecting your creativity and feeling empowered and just say and share with people, yes, and don't be afraid to say, yes, I'm creative. So It's going to be a workshop. I want to go into schools, into minorities, communities where they don't have that facility. And it's very easy. Like for me, it's just 2 hours and I take people on a journey. Mm-hmm. And at the end, so at the very beginning, I ask the question, like, who is creative in this world? And people that start blushing, like, it's just like, it's just like the worst question I could ask people. And then at the end, you should see, I actually should,
film it.
Yeah. Because I asked the exact same question and people are, even their posture and you like, and they, I see smiles and even people like rising hands saying, can I share a story? And like, oh my God, like, there is a before and after, and that's just, I want to bring that to anywhere I'm happy to travel. Like this is how I know that's going to help people connect with each other as well.
And there is an urgency to that. I mean, I think that makes me think back to the great TED talk by Sir Ken Robinson. I don't know if you ever saw that, where he talked about how our creativity is educated out of us, and it's so true, and it's so empowering, and to believe that. I mean, we've both worked in the creative industries, and the biggest issue with the creative industries, we have creative departments, and then you're a creative and you're not a creative. It's crazy to think that the most creative of industries partitions its superpower, its creativity, rather than encouraging it in others. So I think that's really exciting. How do you take it into schools? And because if we think about what Ken Robinson said, it's educated out of us. So you go into a room full of 5-year-olds and ask who's creative, everyone will probably put their hands up. But by, 10th grade in the US or secondary school in the UK, you ask kids that when they're 15, 16, how many are creative, then as you say, there'll be people shrinking in their seats, looking the other way and not putting their hands up. And then there'll be those that, smattering of them that do. So where do you start with this? What's more important? Is it minority communities or is it schools? And who do you approach to do it? Or whose help do you need? If anyone listening to this can reach out to you.
Yeah, you know what? It's fairly early stage wanting me to get out there where people are not waiting for me and where people need me the most, I'd say. So I'm in the process of getting in touch with, and I think word of mouth. So people hearing this podcast would be a great help, because I do think what I love to teach minorities or at school is, what if there was another way? So other way of telling, teaching about creativity. And even at the very beginning of my workshop, I don't tell the definition of creativity, because there are tons. And this is not the point. The point is actually, again, stepping into action mode. So I don't have as yet any magical formula to get into schools, that I do trust. And that's the beauty of my tribe worldwide, is that whenever I'm talking about this project, people are very passionate about this mission, and they actually connect me with people, organization, institutions. And I have great talks with some people. That my wish and one of my dreams for 2024 is actually getting out of Europe or France and do that elsewhere, and have the maximum people understand that if you connect with your creativity at an early age, and just learn of how you can do things differently and twist the statu quo, it's going to help you in any range of your life. It's one of the reasons why I want to do it outside corporates, because it's not just to be a better leader or team member or being more creative in your work. It's just being more creative in the way you wake up in the morning and do your day and connect with each other at any level.
An observation. But I think I mentioned to you when we first met, I interviewed a guy called Math Potts, who has an organization called Camarados. And what he does is he believes, knows, understands that the only thing that people really need is purpose and connection or community. So he creates public living rooms and takes furniture around the country and has got now a network of people around the world taking his insights and simple six-step, they're not rules, but guidance to how to create these community spaces, these third spaces, essentially, in other countries and having a massive impact on it. Do you think that you could do a similar thing with, let's say, whether it be the Sunshine Hour or your for to build your creative tribe, or could you do it with Supper Club? Could you sort of almost like expand it so that you're not just the only person, but there are people, cohorts like you around the world taking your tools, your techniques, your insights, and creating that exponential ripple effect?
That is on my to wish list, to do list, or whatever we call it. So I've come to understand that I've got like this kind of playbook in my head of how I do things and the winning formula of my workshop, and that I could easily coach people with like some guidelines and do and don't and be ready to actually embrace and empower creativity, connection, purpose, and all of those, the Supper Club as well. And to actually find some people in different countries and to be leaders in their own city. But I do think even if we've got people embracing that position in a couple of different cities, we need a couple of times a year to have like this big get together with all those people to create the momentum.
Absolutely. I mean, I could see it. You know, just as you're talking, you've got these component pieces. And if you have a, I don't know if you have a platform like a Mighty Networks or a Circle or one of these ones that everyone's a part of. You have your community leaders in different countries. There are mini Carolines that are leaders in those countries running supper clubs, running creative coaching sessions with schools, marginalized communities, running virtual Sunshine Hours, doing their coffee meetups, and everyone that they're then encountering gets invited to the network. Clearly, there's an opportunity for some revenue generation for you in that network. And then you have your annual or biannual get together on some island or wherever. But I could see it. I could see how it can scale.
There is so much to do. It's just a matter of, I think, finding the right people and having this common purpose. You talk about purpose, but I think, and I talk a lot about intention. Mm-hmm. You have to know your intention and how you want to do it and the values you attach to this intention and purpose. And then it can only be like beneficial for the world.
No, for sure. You've said that you find comfort in the discomfort. Where does that come from?
So that comes from, and I think I've mastered this the last 2 years as I got myself into ice bathing, which was not really where I thought I would end up, because I was the one being always cold within the tribe. So coming from like a fear of cold and everything, and then found myself interested about the Wim Hof world. So for the ones who, Wim Hof, you have no idea, he's this man from the Netherlands who created this 100% natural method around breathing and ice bathing to feel stronger, healthier, and happier, to get it short. And the first time I've immersed myself into the ice, it was a life-changing experience. And I got out of the ice bath and I thought to myself, if I manage to do that, like my brain like switched. If I manage to do that, I can manage to do anything in my life, whatever the matter is, like whatever it is. And then I really deep dive into the method and got certified a Wim Hof instructor. So It's just, for me, it's just an amazing tool. And again, something 100% natural, because it's all about breathing. So going back inwards, breathing, ice bathing, which you can do cold showers. That's a good one as well. If you live in an apartment like me in Paris and you don't have an ice bath in the middle of your living room, cold shower is a very good one. Otherwise, ice bathing in nature is amazing as well. So it's just like amazing. And if you do it with consistency every day, so for example, for the cold shower every day, or just end up your shower with cold
for one minute,
just makes an amazing effect. And when you start your day with a cold shower, anything could happen after, like, it's fine. You're going to deal with that. Like, you've managed to find comfort into the discomfort, because of course it's painful the first time, the second time, the 10th time. Of course it's painful. But you know what? Your brain's going to remember that feeling, and it's going to help you deal with, if your body, like, remember this sort of what they called positive stressors, like small positive stressors, you're going to be able to deal with any type of physical, emotional pain that might arise within your life.
Yep. I know. Yeah, I know so well. I need to be doing these cold showers. The 1 minute ending it. I need to do it. Anyway, less about me. You've come through a fascinating trajectory from those early years of isolation and at school, not saying you're ostracized, but you're the outsider, to building a tribe, a global community that's growing and scaling. It's natural for any human to face fear, uncertainty, doubt. You know, we all have our quiet moments where we worry. How do you deal with that?
I would say that I make my dreams bigger than my fears. So I tend to go where my fears are the highest, because I do believe that, like, first, behind a fear, there is a deep desire of something. And I think by stepping out of my comfort zone and challenging myself more and more, I actually tend to lower my fears with times. And I think it was very true. And it's always been true, but again, the last 4 or 5 years, as I shifted, like, there's so many things. Like, just last year, if I remember last year, because I did kind of a sum up of my 2023, I bloody jumped. I jumped out of a 7 meter cliff into ice water.
Oh,
so that was like, come on. It's just like, it's just something I was so scared of. I climbed a mountain in Poland. It was -25 degrees. I was in shorts, and I'm still alive and smiling to you, Mark. So wrote a book, and I'm not a writer. So it just convinced myself that I've got all the tools inside and I can achieve anything. And just remembering all those, and when it comes, like, all those times of self-doubt, uncertainty and everything, I just remember all those happy achievements and stuff that I did where I got out of my comfort zone. I've got the image right there, and I'm like, okay, yeah, 7 meter cliff jump. Yeah, that's fine. So I'm ready for anything. I think that helps me.
Aside from Wim Hof, who or what inspires you?
I'd say I'm not a big, like, I'm not going to name any, like, famous people I admire, but it's just like, I'd say that more commonly people who are themselves, no matter what, like, people who are who they are without no filters. And sometimes the most random encounters, I smile because I've got someone in mind, like, in the middle of the desert. I did it 8 days. Desert trekking in Morocco, and this guy, the guide that had been living in the desert for 20 years, so all he could see was sand, said one day, as I was walking and my feet were hurting and I couldn't, anyway, I had a hard day within the 8 days, and I started telling him, oh, it's a shame because blah, blah, blah. And then he stopped me and he said, in life, it's never a shame. It's never too late. And I was like, it's never a shame. It's never too late. Oh, that's a good one. You know what? It's just so simple. And he was just there. So I think people who inspire me are the people who are just simply who they are. And people, and I'd say as well, people who show up for their tribe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one to me.
Aside from your book, New, is there a book you would recommend people read this year?
I am reading, so I haven't finished, but I've got it here. So
I'm so for happy. Mug out it.
Yeah, so just started. I'm in page 100. It's just, I found it very refreshing to have another point of view of someone who is an engineer to talk about happiness. The joy to the path to joy. So that is a good one.
Great book. I would ask you what show should people watch, but you don't watch shows, so I will skip that one. And what you're doing with your coffee conversations, the Wim Hof method, the ice baths, the showering, the supper club, they're all great. You could put them into the term of life hacks, but if there's any other little hack that you think that people might not be aware of that they could do that would be have a little marginal but potentially big impact on their lives.
One that was very true for me the last few years is go slow to grow fast. It's just like slow down, because again, I'm going to say it for the, I don't know, fourth or fifth time, but connecting the dots, looking backwards. Mm-hmm. So just stop and stay silent. Because I think I had the deepest epiphanies, ideas, connection in silence and when I was actually slowing down. And I think two of my deepest, like the sunshine hour, I had the idea when I was sitting in my chair looking at the sun, not doing anything, just breathing. And last year, my why that I managed to put into words was when I was climbing that mountain in Poland by -25, but we didn't talk for 3 hours. So there was no talking for 3 hours and I was just breathing inside. Mm-hmm. So that was all in silence. And it was like, I'd sum up by go slow to grow fast, because that was a big one for me. And then another one would be morning pages.
Journaling.
So journaling. And you know what? The minutes you get out of bed, and what helped me, because now I'm doing morning pages, but before, and I kind of mix both, but for some people, the blank page is like quite like intense and stressful, and people have no idea and they kind of get stressed saying, I've got no idea what to write. Like, what do you want me to write? So there is this amazing tool called the 5-minute journal. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I've had a couple of different versions of this one. So it's for the people that struggle with a blank page. So just one page, 2 minutes when you get up, 2 minutes when you go to bed. And you just write down like 3 things you're grateful for, your intention for the day, and how your day would be a wonderful day. And at the end, you reflect on your day. And that's great questions, very simple. It really helps me, going forward. So that's a good one. And the last one, and that's for you, Mark. I'm just going to repeat cold shower, because you know what? I'm going to add a number. If you do a cold shower, it raises your dopamine levels by 250%. Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Dopamine level 250%. So tomorrow you're going to have your cold shower. Sorry.
Yeah. Can you just...
Sorry, but not sorry.
Can you do it gradually? Can you turn it down, 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 so you acclimatize? Or do you have to do it all in one go?
You know what? The second part of my why is one step and one breath at a time. So it's only with small steps. So you start small and then you pick up. So tomorrow morning, you're just going to do your warm shower. And at the end, you're going to do... I started... So I'm a Wim Hof instructor. I started 3 years ago with 5 seconds of cold water at the end of my warm shower. And now I can stand. Like I can... take like cold showers for like a few minutes and do ice baths and everything. So start small and then.
I think that the issue I've got is a trauma. You know, I went for a little bit of time at school. I went to a boarding school. I wasn't exactly the most well-behaved kid. I won't get into some of the stories, but, you know, my punishment, amongst other things, was being made to go out in the wilds of Scotland in the Perthshire countryside and run in my kilt and a little singlet in the snow round the cross-country course at 6 a.m. and then come in and have to stand in a cold shower while the prefects would watch. It's in no way improves your dopamine level at all, I can tell you that. So I've got this legacy trauma from teenage years that I've got to overcome, but that's my challenge. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up. So you describe yourself again as you're clearly a creative woman of action and unconventional maybe in your methods. So, you know, it's totally inspiring to see what you're doing, and anything that I can do and use our networks to help you and connect you and scale this, we're open to it, which then leads us to reciprocate and ask you, well, I have this belief in the power of random collisions, of connecting other guests and stuff, and I'll certainly do that with you. So yeah, if you're open to that, we'll start doing that and always looking for ways to collaborate with guests that are doing important, impactful work in the world, particularly when they use the word action takers, because, you know, I think I've said this on previous interviews and podcast episodes, we've got enough think tanks, we need action takers. We need to create an action engine of people connected together across the world who are all united in the same belief that small little bits of action will have an exponential effect on communities and people as we rediscover our humanity. So yeah, hopefully this will not be the last time we speak. So the final question is, who do we interview next?
Okay, I've got this person you need to meet and interview, and he's called Edward Malkenborg. He's a great man of community and a man of action too, and he values community like no others. So he was my stranger coffee 2 weeks ago. And you know what? He's been working in the advertising world for 20 years. So we've got stuff in common. Mm-hmm. He had his own agency and he stopped everything for one mission: to pour coffee in elderly homes. And he started doing that and collecting amazing stories by asking those people, what can I learn from you? He wrote a book. He was on TV, and I'm not going to say more because he's got like some amazing project you're going to be passionate about. So you need to reach out for sure.
Okay. Yeah, definitely want to talk. That's fascinating. That intersects with some other sort of work I'm doing aside from the podcast. So that'd be fascinating. Okay. Well, Caroline, thank you. I really appreciate your time. Inspired by the work you're doing. Challenged by the challenge that I face of taking cold showers. I'll report back on how that goes. We'll see if my dopamine spikes. I'll have to get some monitor for that one. And yeah, look forward to following up on what you're doing. And all power to you.
Thank you, Mark, for this conversation. That was very inspiring.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, that's all for now, folks. Now here's my ask of you. Please follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or whatever player you use. Also, please subscribe to our Random Collisions newsletter. We really are working to build a global community of action takers, action engines of people that really care about the problems that need solving. Thank you very much, and see you next time.